It's time for another edition of San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley. Without further ado, enjoy the program.
The Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce is proud to sponsor the monthly Monte Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast, highlighting member businesses, events, and organizations. The Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce exists to promote business in the Monte Vista area. They serve its members and the community at large by planning and hosting many local events, social media promotions, advertising, and help to improve community relations and communication among the residents and guests of the Monte Vista area. Their mission is to advance a sustainable business environment and improve the quality of life for the community. The Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce is located at 947 First Avenue. You can call them at 719-852-2731. That's 719-852-2731. Or visit their website, montavistachamber.org. That's montavistachamber.org. And check back at the beginning of every month for another Monte Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast on slvoices.com.
Coming up on this podcast are three separate interviews in an extended format. The first is with the director of the Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce, Danielle Anderson. She is also the vice president and chief financial officer for Rio Grande Savings and Loan Association in Monte Vista. Then we have the March Chamber of Commerce Business of the Month, the Friends of the San Luis Valley National Wildlife Refuges, Colorado, featuring Vice President and Biologist Jenny Nearing, along with Refuge Manager and Liaison to the Friends, Susan Bouchane. And wrapping up this podcast is Jose Lopez Gonzalez, owner of Taqueria y Antojitos Los Lopez Restaurant.
I'm Adam, and this is the Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce Business Spotlight for March 2020. Part of each month's podcast is to introduce our listeners to the local Chamber of Commerce and the good folks behind the scenes. This month, we're talking with Danielle Anderson, who is a director on the board of the Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce. Danielle, welcome back to the SL Voices studio.
Thank you.
First, let's cover your story. You know, you were here on a previous podcast with Gary Wilkinson. You were telling us about the Monte Vista Education Foundation, where you serve as the vice president.
Right.
Now, as I recall, you're a lifetime resident of Monte Vista. You've worked for several local businesses, and now you are the vice president and chief financial officer for Rio Grande Savings and Loan for about the last 12 years?
Correct.
And of course, you enjoy being outdoors, camping, ATVing and such. Anything new to add to all that?
No, that about sums it up.
Tell us what you do at the Rio Grande Savings and Loan Association as the vice president and chief financial officer. It's a lot of titles.
It is. So I take care of the books, I work on the budget, payroll, and manage our liquidity.
It's a full-time job right there, isn't it?
It is.
Can you give me a little history of the Rio Grande Savings and Loan Association, which I understand started right here in Monte Vista over 100 years ago?
Correct. We were established in 1905. We have three locations. Our main office is here in Monte Vista. We have a branch in Alamosa and also one in Pagosa Springs.
The savings and loan is a little bit different from a traditional bank. How do they differ?
So there really isn't much difference between the two. We offer all the same products and services of a traditional bank. We're able, like I said, to offer all the same products and services of a traditional bank. And now with banking, it's gone mobile. So you could do a lot of your banking through our mobile app, you know, send money to another state via person-to-person payments. Just like a traditional bank, they offer the same products and services.
How is Rio Grande Savings and Loan Association involved locally in Monte Vista and the surrounding communities?
So we're involved in many sorts of ways. We encourage our employees to be involved in the community as well with different events and organizations. We have staff members that are involved with Kiwanis and, of course, the Chamber of Commerce. We donate quite a bit amongst the community. One of our biggest donations has been pretty recently with donating to the Friends of the Sky High. We were able to donate $50,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I would challenge others to donate whatever they can. I think it is a great opportunity for Monte Vista and the San Luis Valley. I'm excited for it.
I think a lot of people are. We're all looking forward to a new Sky High complex.
Exactly.
What do you see as the biggest financial challenge facing local businesses in Monte Vista today? And not just our brick and mortar businesses, but farmers, ranchers, self-employed people.
I think a lot of online shopping is hard for our brick and mortar businesses around the valley. Not saying that I don't do any myself, but it's nice to shop local and however you can contribute back to our own town. It means a lot. And we have some great businesses here in Monte Vista. The Finery, the clothes in there are exciting. And our newest business that I know of here in Monte Vista, Fay Moon Wolf Designs. I haven't been in personally yet, but from what I've seen in the window, it looks fun. I'm ready to go in there. I just haven't had the opportunity yet.
It's a very unique gift shop.
Yeah.
We're doing, of course, other businesses. Consider Monte Vista.
Right.
We're a growing town. There's a lot happening downtown. As we're recording this for, again, our March podcast, the swoop of the cranes is happening here in town. It's exciting.
It is.
And yet, what are some of the challenges you believe our younger generations are facing here in Monte Vista today?
So I thought about that, and I think more so, it's more than just in Monte Vista. It's everywhere. But bullying, you know, I think that that's a big challenge for our younger generation all over. We had it when I was younger and probably when you were younger as well, but now it's more broad. With online and social media and stuff, it's just there constantly to where when we were younger, it was more when you saw the other kids, which was mostly at school. I have a big concern for that. I hope that we could get a grip on it.
Do you have a proposed solution?
No, not necessarily, but maybe the younger kids don't need social media in their lives so early on, you know?
It is all consuming.
Yeah.
Or it can be, I should say. Danielle, where do you see Monte Vista, say, 3 to 5 years from now?
You know, I see it being very successful. I see it growing. I see a lot of good in Monte Vista right now, good things happening. I asked some friends the same question, and I wanted another perspective on it. And they said, we'd like to see it like the 70s. You know, you didn't have to go anywhere else. Everything was here in Monte Vista. I see it being like that again one day.
How did your financial institution become involved with the Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce?
So we just really like being involved in the community, and we saw the Chamber of Commerce doing just that. They try and bring in more businesses onto the chamber. It's expanded a lot from just Monte Vista. We're trying to connect with all of the different towns. And so we decided that we wanted to be involved in that.
And what do you do as a director on the board at the chamber?
As a director, you help out at all of the different community events. The Ag Conference, we just finished that.
That was a biggie, too.
It was very successful. Thanks. We also have board meetings the fourth Thursday of the month. We are already starting to plan for next Ag Conference for next year. And of course, the Crane Fest coming up here in a couple weeks. So we will be ready for that.
There's a lot happening, isn't
there? There is.
Tell me about some of the events coming up. Again, you mentioned the Ag Conference, which is finished. We've got the Crane Fest coming up in early March. What else is going on?
The Home and Garden Show will be coming in April. The Brown Bag Luncheon Health Series has been every month, been pretty successful. I like that one. That's one of my favorites.
Danielle, what do you see as the benefits of a local business or organization joining our Chamber of Commerce?
So there's great marketing, just like these podcasts. It's no expense to the business. It's all on us, on the Chamber, and just being involved.
And they're getting thousands of listens to each of these podcasts, too. So it's been very, very successful, and we certainly appreciate working with our Chamber to do this. Danielle, anything else that you'd like to mention?
One thing I'd like to go back to, the biggest financial challenge for farmers and ranchers, and I just wanted to go back to that a little bit with the water. You know, the water is a big factor with farmers and ranchers right now, and we just need to hold on to that precious water and not sell it and stand behind our ranchers and farmers. They make up a lot of the San Luis Valley and bring a lot of income, which helps out all of the community.
They really do. Agriculture is huge.
It is.
Here in the valley. Danielle, we appreciate you coming by the SL Voices studio, telling us about what you do at Rio Grande Savings and Loan Association, how you're involved with our local Chamber of Commerce, and certainly urge people to reach out to you. Your contact information will be on this podcast webpage. Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you.
It's time for the annual spring migration of the Sandhill Cranes. Susan Bouchane, SLV Refuge Complex Manager, and Jenny Nearing, Vice President of the Friends of the SLV National Wildlife Refuge, join us for an extended interview. We discuss the mission of the Friends organization, what they do for the refuge, various early events, why these refuges are so important to the San Luis Valley, and so much more.
It's that time of year again. The cranes are coming. Actually, they're already here as we record this podcast. They're starting to come in by the hundreds or thousands, would you say, Suzanne?
Probably thousands by now.
In the thousands. It's an amazing sight to see. We're here to find out all about what's going on with the cranes and talk with the good folks at the Friends of the San Luis Valley National Wildlife Refuges, Colorado. Here to talk with us are Suzanne Bouchain. She is the refuge manager and refuge liaison to the Friends of the San Luis Valley National Wildlife Refuges. Also joining us this time is Jenny Nearing. Jenny, you are a biologist and the vice president of the Friends.
That's correct.
We welcome you as well. We're glad to have you here. And first off, let's get your stories. Suzanne, where are you originally from?
I grew up in Minnesota. So west of the cities. I came out west in 1985 to Wyoming. Kind of didn't leave.
Well, how'd you end up in the San Luis Valley?
My job with the refuge system. So came from Montana, up in southwest Montana at Red Rock Lakes Refuge. So I've been in the Fish and Wildlife Service about 20 years now.
Do you have any off time? And if so, what do you like to do?
We do get some off time. I love to hike and cross-country ski and backpack and mountain bike and go see friends and family.
Outdoor stuff.
Yes, outdoor stuff.
I understand that. Again, you work for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. That makes sense. Well, Jenny, where are you originally from?
I grew up in Arvada, suburb of Denver. Moved to the valley from Boulder via Nashville, if that makes any sense.
Boulder via Nashville?
Boulder via Nashville.
There's a story there. Go ahead.
Well, I grew up in Arvada, went to school up at CU in Boulder, met my husband up there, and from Boulder, we moved to Nashville for 3 years. And then my husband was offered a job at Adams State to teach physics, and that's what landed us back in Colorado. And that was in June of 1998. Been here ever since and love the valley. Love that it's not like the rest of Colorado. I'm like Suzanne in my off time. I'm outside as well. I like to hike and cross-country ski. I like to raft and fish the river. I'm a cyclist. So yes, I'm here for the outdoor opportunities as well.
I think it kind of comes with the territory living in the San Luis Valley. It's an outdoorsy kind of place.
It is.
She has two really smart girls too.
I do. I have two daughters. Crane Fest time is also science fair time, and we're usually busy at home at this time of year too.
Well, I wanted to let you know that the Friends of the San Luis Valley National Wildlife Refuge, Colorado, is the Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce Business of the Month for March. So congratulations.
Thank you. The partnerships with the Chamber have been wonderful partnerships for our Friends group. They assist us in many ways. Most importantly, we rely on them for some cost-effective insurance coverage when we do events for our community, such as the Monte Vista Crane Festival, as well as the Fall Kids Crane Festival, which is in October of every year, down at the Monte Vista Refuge.
That's a whole lot of fun.
Yes.
We took our grandkids a couple years ago. They just had an absolute ball.
Good.
Neat event. We'll cover that a little bit more later. Your mission statement says the Friends is an independent, nonprofit group dedicated to supporting the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service refuge system and to promoting awareness of the Alamosa, Baca, and Monte Vista National Wildlife Refuges through education and support. That's quite a mission statement.
It is. The name of our group and our refuge system, it's all very wordy.
Mm-hmm.
That contributes to the wordiness of our mission statement, but really the take-home components of that mission statement are supporting our refuges through education and support.
How long has the Friends organization been active here in the San Luis Valley?
It was initially kind of pulled together in 1999, but formalized in 2000. One of the things that I think has benefited our Friends group is that we've been a very solid handful of people for now 20 years, going on 21. Tim Armstrong was our president for 20 years, and he has just stepped away. And now Deb Callahan is our new president. And we have a very good membership. We have, you know, nearly 200 paying members, which is really pretty impressive for a Friends group that's in a rural area. Often, Friends groups that are closer to metropolitan areas have Friend membership numbers that are up in that realm, but we have a pretty solid membership. And a lot of that we attribute to the Monte Vista Crane Festival. That's the time of year that our area gets the most visitors, and that is the time of year that our Monte Vista Refuge in particular gets the most public visitation and awareness of the resources it provides.
Well, it's an amazing event to come see if you have not. It is happening March 6th, 7th, and 8th this year. And if you listen to this podcast afterwards, come next year. If you want to learn more about the sandhill cranes, their migration, what they eat, and a whole lot more, I would urge you to listen to the podcast we produced last year on this that featured then-President Tim Armstrong. Also in the podcast was the Friends' current president, as you mentioned, retired wildlife biologist Deb Callahan. And of course, Suzanne, you were with us too. We covered an awful lot of ground. It is called the 36th Annual Monte Vista Crane Festival. Again, that was for 2019. You can find it on slvoices.com. We will also link it on this podcast page. Jenny, how has the Friends organization changed over the years?
In our early years, we were trying to just build our membership and build interest in the refuges. The early years were before the Baca was even part of the refuge system. We've done trail building programs. We've done auto tour pullout work. So our Friends group tries to do some work days through the year, focused mostly during the summer months. We've assisted the refuge on lots of different activities, like a kids' fishing day. We've mentioned the Kids Crane Festival. That was something that we started about 10 or 12 years ago, and it was an event. So people were aware that our cranes are here in the fall as well. And it was an event focusing on activities for kids because the Spring Crane Festival has very little for kids in particular. We've worked on outreach through the years. We have something in September called the Friends and Neighbors Dinner. We invite all our Friends members to attend a dinner. It's held at one of the refuges. We rotate amongst the three refuges each year where it's hosted, and we usually have a speaker. It's an opportunity for our refuge staff to tell the public about what's going on at the refuges. One of the things that we haven't done in the last 5 years, but was a really important thing we did in the early 2000s, was lobbying Congress and lobbying our state congressional representatives to fund our refuge system better. It initially started with the formation of the Baca National Wildlife Refuge, which was in 2000. 92,000 acres are added to the refuge system and to our San Luis Valley refuges, but without a dime of funding. So that's a wonderful thing to get an expansion of protected areas for conservation, but if there's no money to fund it, it becomes very difficult and just spreads refuge staff even thinner. So we were able to lobby our state senators to get funding. There were a number of conferences that our Friends members attended. They were Friends conferences in other areas of the country, meeting with other Friends groups to understand what other groups are finding effective ways to reach the public. And then also some conservation-related conferences at the NCTC, National Conservation Training Center, in West Virginia. And we have lobbied Congress. Just our Friends members have gone to Washington, D.C., and this was a program through the National Wildlife Refuge Association, and it's called the Friends Fly-In. And they fly Friends members in from all over the country to talk to your United States senators and congressmen and women to fund the National Wildlife Refuge System. That's been a neat opportunity for many of our Friends members and just a really important thing to do because funding for our refuges is rather poor. Shifts in funding can be rather dramatic between presidential administrations, and we as a Friends group can be more or less effective with our effort to promote and support our refuge system based on how well our refuge is staffed with personnel to do their jobs.
So what you're saying is while the Friends Colorado group here is unique to the San Luis Valley, this concept, though, is not unique to the entire United States. There are Friends groups in other states and throughout our country here.
Yes, there's over 500 National Wildlife Refuge systems, and I don't know what percentage of them have Friends groups, but a very large percentage of them.
I'm positive it would be over half.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I had no idea.
It's a really effective way to advocate for your public lands, is to have a nonprofit arm of your public lands that are there to support you, help carry out some of the work of the refuge, but also be able to speak out in support of funding and those sort of things, which is something that refuge staff can't do. The refuge staff can't go to Washington, D.C. to talk to congressional representatives about funding.
They're busy keeping the refuge running every day.
And they're absolutely not allowed
to. Not allowed to do that.
Oh.
That's against policy to do that. So we can speak up where our refuge staff are not able to.
So I'd love to add a few more things that the Friends group has really supported the refuges on.
Sure.
Our regional office is in Denver. So we do get a lot of attention from Denver. And if there's, how do you say it, muckety-mucks higher up in our agency that come to this region and want to highlight something. We're really close. So a lot of times they come down here. So the Friends Group has really supported all those meetings that we've had and events that we've had surrounding those folks. Several people from DC. So that's been really, really important. Also, just having this group of people that have that passion for wildlife and conservation, and a lot of folks are biologists, retired biologists or working biologists right now. You're outside the agency, so you're still a visitor, but that expertise of having input for our management plans, it's been 5 years now, but our comprehensive conservation planning effort, which is a 15-year document, that was a public process document, and just having a lot of other input coming in is really valuable versus just sitting in your own little office going, huh, who should we talk to? So that's been really amazing. And they've actually won at least a couple years of awards for the National Friends Group.
Yeah, we won it once. I should say that, you know, we can advocate for our refuges in a way that they cannot advocate for themselves. But there's a key component to that, and we only advocate for our refuges in a way that our refuges are comfortable with us advocating for them. We do not operate outside of the knowledge of our refuge staff and the blessing of our refuge staff to approach certain issues or topics. And that's a really important thing to note, because not every Friends Group has had a great relationship with their refuge staff. There's some instances where those two teams that are supposed to align have not aligned, and that's not constructive.
So you all are basically working hand in hand with each other to make sure that you're complementing what each is wanting to do.
Right.
And bringing up all three refuges at the same time. Your organization is best known, of course, for the annual Crane Festival in the spring, as well the Kids Crane Fest in the fall. What other types of events are you a part of?
The refuge hosts a Christmas bird count every December. That's been a very long-standing Christmas bird count effort.
20 years too?
Oh, no, like 60 years or something.
Yeah.
A very long time. We sponsor awards for the San Luis Valley Science Fair every year. We try to target kids who have either done a project on the refuge or have done a project on something that's applicable to wildlife or something of interest on our refuges.
What kind of wildlife do you see out there? I mean, obviously there's a lot of birds, but Suzanne, maybe you could better address this. You're out every day. What all is there?
Well, right now there's happens to be a lot of cranes here.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely on Monta Vista. So depending on the time of year, the wildlife does change. So the cranes will be here in the spring and the fall. So they do leave in the summertime to go up further north to nest. This time of year also is the first of the waterfowl water birds come through. So a lot of ducks are out there, mallards, pintails. Saw some cinnamon teal. They seem early. A lot of Canada geese too. You get different waves, but Monta Vista really was established for waterfowl and water birds, migratory birds. And that's still really what we focus on. We do obviously manage for the other bird species that don't get as much notoriety, like a western meadowlark, the grassland birds or the shrubland birds. Species are similar on Alamosa in a way, not as many sandhill cranes over there. We do have colonial nesting water birds. They're mostly focused on Monta Vista Refuge, but we do have them on Alamosa feeding. The river goes through that refuge, so we have the river habitat or riparian. And we have the southwestern willow flycatcher there, which is an endangered species, and they need the willows to survive. We have fun porcupines. They're so easy to see, and so many people have never seen one. I'm amazed at how many people have not ever seen a porcupine.
Really?
Yeah. So they're fascinating creatures.
Mm-hmm.
We do have elk on all three refuges, sometimes very visible on all three refuges. So with the water on Alamosa, we've also got beaver and muskrat and definitely a lot of other songbirds and migratory birds. And then the Baca was established for kind of that migratory birds also and the resident wildlife, but it was also established for that broader conservation effort that protected a big chunk of the closed basin area for protecting water in that part of the valley.
Jenny, can you tell me about becoming a member of the Friends organization and why someone would consider joining?
Becoming a member is quite easy. You can do it online at our website, slvrefuges.org. And why would you want to do that? Well, you get a newsletter 3 times a year, and we just have converted to delivering that digitally to reduce our printing costs. When you're a member of the Friends Group, you're supporting conservation efforts in the San Luis Valley. You're supporting a volunteer group of people who are working hard to make sure our refuges are as healthy and as effective as they can be for the wildlife that use them in the San Luis Valley.
The Friends group also has definitely supported a lot of visitor services, like parking areas. We're actually trying to improve one of our parking areas for Crane Festival specifically, but it's actually a really awesome birding spot, so partnering with grant funding and what the refuge can contribute and just labor on making this little, it'll be kind of a little park-like area.
Yeah. Most people know it as the 8 South Pullout right now, but the vision is to turn a parking area to the east of there so you walk over into the treed area where people usually pull in and watch the cranes. It'll be a park that people are encouraged to walk through it instead of to pull in your vehicle in.
And since the Friends group, the chamber, and the city took over organizing the Crane Festival, the visitation has gone up, which we've definitely noticed that. And we're having more issues with cars meshing in with pedestrians. So we're trying to separate those two uses. So working on that.
Can you tell me a little bit about the three different wildlife refuge areas that you're a part of and what makes each of them unique to our area?
Well, we can start on Monte Vista. That was established first in the early 50s. And it was really established around Spring Creek, which was an artesian spring system. It was a lot of water coming out of the ground year round. That was really critical habitat because it was moving water throughout that whole area. A lot of birds were using that area and it wasn't really farmable very easily. So it was established for that. And since the changes in groundwater has occurred, that spring dried up in the 60s and early 70s. So we have had to kind of change to a lot more infrastructure. So we have pumps and we're shareholders on the big canals that go through. So we do try to manage the habitat with a lot of changes that have occurred over the last 20 years. It's been pretty amazing, the different changes. So we're doing our best that we can with the different changes in water availability and reducing budgets, because we do need to pay for pumping of water on Monte Vista. But there's a lot to see in a little area on Monte Vista. It's a really important wetland system in the valley. So Alamosa, and that Monte Vista is about 15,000 acres, whereas Alamosa was established in the early 60s, and that's about 12,000 acres. And that was really focused, again, on migratory birds and the wetland systems, but also the river goes through there. So again, we have some wells and then a major senior water right that feeds those wetlands, trying to kind of mimic what the river used to do before we did have a massive irrigation system in the valley put in the late 1800s, early 1900s. That's a really, really beautiful area over there. We have a couple of walking trails that are open year-round that actually they totaled about 6 miles round trip on those walking trails. There's a nice wildlife drive over there too. Yeah, it's just very different habitat from Monte Vista.
And then there's the big one, the Baca.
And then the big one, the Baca. That used to be a ranch, so there are a lot of wet meadows because they did do a lot of irrigating with a creek water coming down. But it was also a playa system, which is a very rare habitat in this valley. It's difficult to get water there because, again, there's been many changes in the groundwater table and the amount of water coming from snowpack in the creeks. So things have been very changed up there. There are several of the creeks with riparian habitat, and they have actually state species of concern, the Rio Grande chub and Rio Grande sucker. So they're little cute fish. And there's only a handful of creeks that actually have pure strain. I want to say like six?
Well, in Colorado, I think there's only two. Prior to the Baca being acquired or becoming part of a National Wildlife Refuge, only Lahara Creek down in the southwest corner of our valley was known to be a native area for these two species of fish in Colorado. In New Mexico, there are more known populations. So when they were discovered at the Baca, it was very exciting. Not only were they there, but they were there in very healthy population sizes. There's some fascinating work that's going on up at the Baca, tagging the fish and monitoring their movements, because they have utilized a ditch delivery system for years and are surviving adequately in this surprising system. So there's some neat research going on up there, tracking their movements so that we can better understand how they have used that habitat so that we maintain that habitat for them, while also using the water up there wisely, because it's diminished dramatically due to the declining aquifer. And as Suzanne mentioned, that playa system up there.
So why are these wildlife refuge areas so important to the San Luis Valley? It's the big question.
Yeah, that's a great question. I know Jenny, she has more history here because I did not get to see the water like it used to be.
The water like it used to be predates my arrival as well. The San Luis Valley is the biggest wetland area in the state of Colorado. And that's surprising to most people because as you drive through this valley, it's very difficult to appreciate it as being a wet place. But it is the largest and most important wetland area in the state of Colorado. It used to be a whole lot wetter. You'll hear stories from people who've lived here all their lives, old timers who will talk about how the artesian wells that you would see driving down 285 between Sawatch and Monte Vista, for example, there's a number of wells there. And in the winter, they would have these 20 foot plus high ice sculptures on them. And it's just simply from the artesian pressure of water flowing year round and the cold temperatures we have. If you read any of the journals of any of the explorers from the 1800s, like Captain Gunnison, Fremont, Pike, they were all in this area and they knew, or the Indians let them know, that you should not even try to cross the valley floor. If you want to head north, go up the eastern edge of the valley, right at the base of the Sangre de Cristos, make your way up that side, and then once you get to about Rio Alto, I think, that drainage, then you could head west, like head over to Sawatch, way up at that north end of the valley, and then you would be safe not to get your horse and wagon stuck in mud in the middle of the valley. It was just wet everywhere.
I actually love the story I've heard from a couple old-timers that when they were kids living in Sawatch, they could put a canoe in Sawatch, go down Sawatch Creek, go through what now is the Baca, keep going, and end up in the San Luis Lakes.
I've heard stories from old-timers about ice skating that whole stretch. They would run like some trap lines for muskrat and stuff, and they could ice skate from like Villa Grove to San Luis Lakes.
With those water changes, I definitely see that the refuges, those little wetlands in the valley, that those are kind of almost our remnants in a way, along with the BLM Blanca wetlands.
Russell Lake, Colorado Parks and Wildlife, state wildlife areas. Those are remnant. Yeah, yep. I agree. They're just the pieces that are left. But if you go out and visit any of those areas, they're surprising. They do kind of appear out of nowhere. Again, it's difficult to convince people about what a massive wetland the valley is. But if you get to any of these little spots and see the water on the ground and the wildlife that uses the area, you can see that it's a really special area.
Well, ladies, anything else that either of you'd like to mention?
I guess what I'd say is that if you're not familiar with our friends group, I would encourage you to join the friends group. Go check out our website, get a better understanding of some of the things we do. We have an awful lot of neat tours that we offer to just friends members. There's an archaeology area, an archaeological area on the Monte Vista National Wildlife Refuge that is just an astounding area near the Spring Creek that Suzanne mentioned earlier. And we do offer opportunities to go out and see that. There are a number of tours on the Baca every summer that we open up to friends members. It's a great way to meet some nice people working on a friends project. When we do have a work day, we don't work that hard. We don't want to scare anyone away. It's usually we work from about 9 to noon and then we buy you lunch. And it's things like a fence removal or caging cottonwood trees or cleaning up the 8 South area. Just fun, social, and that's the main objective of the work days.
And your website?
slvrefuges.org.
And you're also on Facebook?
Yes, we are.
And of course, your contact information, again, will be on this podcast webpage, all the different ways that you can get a hold of the Friends organization here, and consider joining. Suzanne, anything else?
Just come out to the Crane Festival, which is March 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Absolutely. A lot of fun, a lot of activities, huge amounts of cranes already this year. Certainly come out and do that too. Anything else, ladies?
You know, I would also say that this year for Crane Fest, the full moon is on the 8th. If we have some clear skies, we could have some really dramatic photo opportunities. I think that's one of the things our refuges and our Crane Fest really offers, is really dramatic scenery in addition to a really neat wildlife experience. You can go to Nebraska and see a lot more cranes, but you're not going to have them framed with 14,000 foot peaks that turn pink when the sun goes down. So I'd encourage everyone to come out for that. many of our local residents of Monte Vista and the Valley have never really driven down to see the cranes on the refuge. And sundown and sunrise are some of the most dramatic times to see them. And so I would encourage you to take a drive down and check that out. And if you're not a fan of crowds and all the people that come for Crane Festival, then the weekend before and after Crane Fest are typically as good number-wise as far as the cranes that are visiting and the crane viewing opportunities. Come down to the refuges.
Well, Jenny and Suzanne, I want to thank you both for taking the time to tell us about the Friends of the San Luis Valley National Wildlife Refuges, telling us about what actually goes on, what you all do. This is a whole lot happening, and it certainly would encourage people listening to reach out to the Friends group, find out more, and if you're really interested, join them. There's a lot of neat things that they're doing for the refuges and for our valley as a whole. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Looking for something new and different in the way of Mexican food? Then look no further than Taqueria y Antojitos Los Lopez Restaurant. Owner Jose Lopez Gonzalez is here to talk about his new restaurant, the various services he offers, what sets his food apart, and where he sees Monte Vista in the future.
Looking for something different in the way of Mexican food? Where do you want to go?
Taqueria y Antojitos Los Lopez.
Oh my, that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
You're going to explain that to me, what all that means and everything else. Welcome to the SL Voices studio, Jose Lopez Gonzalez. You are the owner of this relatively new restaurant here in Monte Vista.
Yes, sir.
We're certainly glad to have you. And let's get your story. Where are you originally from?
So I'm originally from Guadalajara, Jalisco. That's a city in Mexico. My family arrived here, and I believe it was 1999. I was about 2 years old. My dad was working here in the United States for a couple years. My grandmother was working up in Creed, I believe, and she started having some family members start moving down here. My dad kind of caught wind of the opportunities to be successful and kind of grow in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So my father came up here, then he worked. He saw the potential. He called my mother. At the time I was already born, we came over here, and I have two sisters, one that she was on the way, and then one that was born about 5 years after that. That's kind of how we got here.
Did you actually end up originally in the San Luis Valley or somewhere else in the country?
We actually got here. My grandmother was living on Madison Street at the time. So it was really, really nice. A lot has changed from when I was a little kid. Very, very good in a way. Like I said, we got here, and that was the first thing we did was move in with my grandmother, and then my father finally got his own place, and we moved out, and we started our own lives doing our own thing as well.
Well, tell me about your own thing. What have you done before the restaurant?
So before the restaurant, I graduated high school from Monte Vista in 2016, I think with a class around 52, so it was relatively small. I competed in sports. I've always been very optimistic. I try to stay busy. Try to not to get in so much trouble. I mean, I was kind of a little bit of a troublemaker growing up, but I mean, everyone has their own times.
Sure.
Growing up, I liked sports a lot. I met a lot of influential people that have shaped me and formed me into the person who I am today. I have a lot of people to thank for that. They've helped me out. They've showed me work ethics. They showed me not everything in life is supposed to possibly happen the way you want, but you just have to take it as is and keep on going and growing and doing just that, you know? I worked at restaurants. My dad took me to Calvillo's when I was about, I believe, 7 years old. He sat me in the back and he told me to start peeling these tomatillos. So at a very young age, my dad put me to work, which helped me develop a great work ethic, in my opinion, and has helped me kind of shape myself into who I am today. And I've always been into the restaurants, businesses. I mean, I have family that owns businesses all over the valley. That's kind of how I got my inspiration of trying to start my own business, particularly in a restaurant business.
Are there any particular groups that you're involved with here in the valley or here in Monte Vista?
Not necessarily any groups, but I do take part in with the Chamber of Commerce. I got familiar with them due to the fact that when I was starting up my business, I was having a hard time really understanding where to get all my permits, all my licenses, and it was just a hassle. I mean, just to get my sales tax, it was really difficult, and I think I was making it more difficult myself. I was just overthinking things. I was putting too much tension that shouldn't have been there. And I was just kind of doubting myself. And I mean, I didn't even take my first steps yet. So there was a gentleman that helped me at the small business, the place right next to the railroad tracks in Alamosa.
Small Business Development Center, yes.
That gentleman actually directed me to the Chamber of Commerce over here. I remember buying the carnival tickets there. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that an old football coach that used to coach me, Gary Wilkinson, was a part of that. He's an amazing guy. He's helped me out. He was always very kind and generous, and he always really saw potential in me, even when I didn't even believe in myself. So it's really nice to have people like that. And I kind of took his word of it, so I wanted to go join it and see how it was, you know?
What do you like to do in your off time? I mean, granted, you're in the restaurant business, so there's probably not a lot of it.
Yeah.
Any hobbies or other special interests?
Yeah, so I generally exercise. I like to lift. I like to do MMA. I really enjoy art as well, drawing, just staying really active. I really don't like to stay too locked up in a room. I feel like you should live life a little bit better. You should take care of your health. With the restaurant business, when we first opened, I mean, I think we were open for about 2 weeks straight. I think it was one day off because things were going so great, but I was burning myself out. I wasn't going to the gym. I felt sluggish. I used to wake up at maybe 6-7 in the morning every day without a problem. And then I would go to work and I'd be literally getting there about 2 minutes before opening. And I felt sluggish. I didn't feel my best. I just was not comfortable, not ready. And it was simply because I wasn't taking care of my body and I just was sick. So at the same time, as business has gone on, I kind of got a little bit smarter and I would stay there all day long, which could be very, very long if you're staying there from anywhere from 10 to possibly 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So almost 13 hours.
It's a long day.
Yeah, it's a long, long day for months. And that's how kind of I worked. And one day me and my sister were like, we should really just take breaks. And after that, it was really, really nice. And I mean, we got it all figured out. I work half days. I mean, if there's anything to be needed, I know I work 3 full days. And every other day I work at least half a day, or I try to do that in my meantime. And like I said, I picked up on my hobbies, drawing and doing all that stuff, because I think it's really important to keep up on that. Because if you put too much attention into a business, I feel like sometimes you could lose who you once were.
Well, it's a balance that you have to draw too. I mean, obviously it's a new business. There's a lot to be done.
Yeah.
And you want to attend to every single detail. But at the same time, as you said, you've got to balance that out with your own personal time and your own health.
Yeah.
Because if that starts to decline, then you've got problems with the business.
Yeah. Like my performance wasn't up to par, in my opinion. That's my main goal, is I just want to feel better when I go in, because I just feel more energetic. I feel like I could talk to the people a lot more, and it's just really nice.
Well, let's talk about your restaurant.
So it's called Taqueria y Antojitos Los López. If you want me to translate that.
I'm going
to
say, what does that mean?
Taqueria is just pretty much, in Mexico, it's like a taco joint. They sell tacos, various tacos, a bunch of them. Down there, I mean, there's a lot more options than up here, you know? I mean, I'm only limited with a certain kind of meats and stuff like that, but we do have a wide variety. And Antojitos is pretty much just like street food, junk food, just quick bites. So we offer this thing called fresas con crema, and it's just pretty much strawberries and cream with whipped cream on top, a vanilla wafer.
Ooh.
And it's very, very simple, subtle. It's quick. We make the corn on the cobs that a lot of people are familiar with the mayo, and I believe it's called skim cheese, and Valentina and tajin. We try to bring in people for that. That was kind of our main goal, but as we realized, our food is really good as well. So like we expanded on it. And well, Los López is just my family name, and I'm not too prideful on it, but I mean, it is something to be proud of, and I am happy, and it's really nice to log online or see something or the newspaper and see your family name on there. It really means a lot.
Well, we're recording this for the March podcast for our Chamber of Commerce here in Monta Vista, and you're actually coming up on your first anniversary soon too, aren't you?
Yeah.
When will that be?
It'll be June 3rd, 2020 will be the first year that we've stayed open.
Mm-hmm.
The first day was pretty hectic. I've always been somebody that wants to wow the community or somebody to give back. We did a 50% off the entire menu, which was really, really fun. But at the same time, it did come back and bite me, because me and my business prepared for about 3 days in advance of food. And that was all gone by 7 o'clock.
Oh my.
We had people waiting out the door. We had people waiting for about 3 hours for just some tacos. And it just would not stop or end. The way I kind of marketed was I just went home, printed out 50% off papers on Microsoft. I had some of my buddies that I told them, you know what? I'll give you $20. Go put them at church, put them on cars, throw them anywhere. I mean, don't litter, but I mean, just get them out there and try to make sure people get to see them. And we had a good response on the first day.
Well, that's a phenomenal response. You ran out of 3 days worth of food in a day.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Tell me about your menu a little. Highlight some of the things that you offer.
We offer tacos, tortas, which are like Mexican sandwiches. We offer burritos. We offer fajitas, hamburgers, and kind of our specialty would be shrimp and the prices on the shrimp. I have ceviche, which is like shrimp dip with a cucumber pico, avocado, and shrimp. Compared to a shrimp cocktail that will have clamato juice and tomato as well. We have shrimp scampi, which is lightly breaded shrimp. We have shrimp a la diabla, which is the one that kind of really is a little bit more the go-getter in our menu. I always try to direct people, if they like seafood, try the shrimp a la diabla. It's a blend of spicy sauce and just sweetness to the shrimp. It's really, really good. And then we have this one called shrimp a mojo de ajo. And if you translate that, it's pretty much just garlic shrimp. I don't want to seem too pushy, but I feel like all the food's really, really good and it's just universal. I also offer vegetarian dishes as well. If somebody were to come up to our business and ask us for vegetarian tacos, vegetarian burritos, vegetarian quesadillas, pretty much anything, I'll make it for them.
You can accommodate them.
Yeah, I will make sure that they're happy. I'll make sure that if anything happens, they're satisfied and they're actually getting what they paid for, you know?
What makes your food so special?
Well, it might sound a little bit cliche, but it's just, you gotta love what you're doing. I could give you pretty much all the ingredients that we have at that restaurant or give it to somebody that is potentially just gonna make it out for money. And then you could give it to someone that actually cares, someone that actually puts their heart, their soul into the food. And like I said, it really, really does sound cliche, but I've seen it happen so many times. I mean, simply with just how you make it. There's no secrets. I mean, you just gotta love what you do. I've seen people that prepare the simplest of foods and they're the most delicious, and somebody that prepares something that you'd probably see in a gourmet kitchen. And I mean, it just doesn't taste the same. It just doesn't taste right. But just the love for it, the passion for it, that's kind of like the key for everything.
There you go. That's what makes it special.
Yeah.
Do you offer other types of services such as catering or doing meetings and such?
Yeah. So we do caterings. If you want quinceañeras, if you want weddings, if you have any meetings for your businesses, you guys could just give me a call. I'd be more than happy to give you guys quotes. I promise you, we give some of the best quotes in the valley. You could shop around and I could guarantee you that our prices will match and the quality and quantity of food will be worth what you're paying for. If you guys could just give us a call and see how much your budget is looking, what you guys are looking to get out of it, what your expectations are. You guys could even come in and kind of taste some things. I mean, I don't mind showing you guys what's good, what's not, if you don't like it. I don't want to sell you anything that you wouldn't eat or anybody else eat. You know, I feel like that's unfair. I just want to make sure that you're getting what you pay for and possibly even better, you know?
And that's what keeps people coming back.
Yes, sir.
And treat them right. How does someone get a hold of you?
So if you guys ever want to get a hold of me, you guys could call the restaurant. It's 719-628-2724. And just ask for my name if you guys want to talk to me directly, if there's any issues, if there's any problems, we could get that all sorted and figured out.
And where are you located at?
We're located at 1042 Park Avenue here in Monta Vista, Colorado. It's right there downtown, kind of where the parade for Stampede starts. So, I mean, that's a good location in the summer.
Yes, it is. And of course, all of this information will be on the podcast webpage too. So if people want to reference that, they can go. You'll have your social media links and everything on there too. So they can look you up and find out more about you. Jose, what do you feel is the most important thing that you do for your business?
Well, there's a lot of important things. I mean,
sure,
showing up and working. Hospitality is a really huge one. Balancing marketing and advertising online, graphic designing for possibly potentially new menus, new logos, helping out my family in the kitchen. That's a new goal that I'm trying to learn is I'm stepping more into the kitchen to learn and be a little bit more universal with my things because I do enjoy cooking a lot. That's another one of my hobbies is cooking. Equally important in a business, I don't think one thing could be so specific and so driven compared to it just has to be an all well-rounded thing.
You mentioned something before we got up here to the studio, a phrase that your father used. Would you repeat that? It was inspiring.
So when we were kind of in the process of opening up our own business, some people kind of doubt us and kind of scare us off or try to scare us off with how much bills are going to be At first, it did scare me because I was unfamiliar and I did not understand what it was. I kind of shied away and I was kind of scared to open up the business when we first did. But my father told me our food is really good and we believe that it could sell. In most cases, a lot of people tend to be a little bit jealous that there might be a possibility that you might outshine them or take business away. And that's not our goal. I mean, we want everyone to do well. And that's where the phrase comes that my dad told me, that when the sun comes out, there's sun for everyone. And pretty much what that means is when the sun would come up, all living things would enjoy the light. And the light is just beautiful. It's warmth. It's comforting. Just like today. I mean, the sun's out. It's really nice and it's shining down on everybody, on all of us. There's always enough business to go around. And if you see some people struggling, you lend a helping hand because we're all in this together. It's not a competition. It's more of a journey that you have to understand. That's kind of how my dad always put this in perspective for me, is you got to be helpful and giving towards others and you just can't be so greedy. And I feel like that's the number one thing that a lot of businesses fail at. It's about me, 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 me. I know I need to pay bills. I make enough to pay my bills, but I care about my community. I could easily jack up prices, but what's that going to do for me? You know, it's just going to drive my customers and my community away from me. But if I respect them, if I understand what they need and do that, I'm winning 10 out of 10. And a lot of problem with businesses sometimes is they're profit and money centric. And that's the biggest mistake you could do, especially when making a business. Because when you do a business, you need to make it customer centric. You have to revolve around what your customers need. I mean, that's why Amazon does such a great job. I mean, I hate to say it, but their prices are so cheap and a lot of people keep going to them because, I mean, it beats out everybody and it's more convenient. You get it in 2 days. I mean, in the city, you could get it in less than an hour. I mean, it's very, very convenient.
The drawback to that, though, is you don't get the customer service.
Exactly.
You really don't know who you're buying from in many cases. And if you have an issue, I mean, again, not knocking Amazon, they do their thing. But what I like, especially going downtown here and doing business, is like coming to your restaurant. You're there. I get to talk to you.
Yeah.
You don't get that interaction with Amazon.
And I mean, that's kind of like where we do good. I am customer centric. I walk around and I introduce myself. I want to make sure that the customers are happy, that they're getting enough, if they're missing anything, if the orders are correct. An educated and a well-rounded business is safe and it's just really nice and good to go towards.
Jose, where do you see Monta Vista, say, 3 to 5 years from now?
I really hope that it starts growing, kind of like we were talking down earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really expecting it to grow. It's a really beautiful town. If I'm being quite honest with you, Monta Vista is really, really like my place and I really enjoy it. I don't want to seem like a hypocrite, but I live in Alamosa right now because, well, my job used to be over there and I drive down from Alamosa down to Monta Vista every day. And I don't mind it because I have a lot of fun memories here. The beautiful sights of seeing Mount Blanca down on 6th Street is just amazing. I mean, I remember I used to live on Madison and 6th and I'd just be walking down 6th with my buddies on our bikes, just going to go play some football or go hang out. And you would literally see the beautiful scenery down here. And I don't know, it's just something about home. I personally believe, like I said, it's one of the best school districts in the valley. I mean, I have heard some good things around everywhere, but I just think Monta Vista is such a great town with amazing community support. And I believe that every city has good community support. You just got to get behind the people and drive with them and you'll do just fine anywhere, you know?
Jose, anything else you'd like to mention, sir?
Just one thing that I really like to say out loud to whoever hears this, and hopefully my community, a lot of my community hears this, is that I'm just really grateful. I'm really grateful for the community that I have supporting me. These are my dreams that I've had since I was a very young kid. I mean, like I said, when I was 7 years old, I was very, very happy peeling tomatillo in the back of a restaurant with my father there. That's kind of when I started seeing the first visions of, oh, I would like something like this. But those were just brief seconds in like a 7-year-old's mind. But as time went on, I really, really saw potential. It was really, really nice. And like I said, I'm just super thankful to my high school. I'm super thankful to my community, my teachers, my mentors, anybody I look up to, my mother, my father, my siblings. I extremely appreciate everything they've done for me. I'm grateful for it. And I mean, I can't wait to see what the future has in store for us. I'm pretty excited for this year because I think we're going to have some pretty big news coming up in about 4 months. And we're keeping that a little quiet right now. I think some people kind of know what it is. It's just time will tell, and we just can't wait to present some good news to you guys.
So check back in the midsummer.
Yeah.
All right. Look forward to that. Well, Jose, we certainly appreciate you coming by the SL Voices studio, telling us about your restaurant, and congratulations. I think you're coming up in your first year. It's a wonderful thing to hear, and we wish you all the best.
No, thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Rio Grande Savings and Loan Association has been proudly serving the San Luis Valley for over 100 years. In Monta Vista, they're located at 901 First Avenue. For more information, call them today at 719-852-5933. That's 719-852-5933. Or visit their website at rgsla.com. That's rgsla.com. Dedicated to supporting the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Refuge System and to promoting awareness of the Alamosa, Baca, and Monta Vista National Wildlife Refuges through education and support. That's the mission of the Friends of the SLV National Wildlife Refuges Colorado. They would love for you to join their group. For more information or to join, go to their website, slvrefuges.org. That's slvrefuges.org. And for something new and different in the way of Mexican food, look no further than Taqueria y Antojitos Los Lopez Restaurant. Located at 1042 Park Avenue in Monta Vista, you can find them on Facebook or call 719-628-2724. That's 719-628-2724. Not yet a member of the Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce? Give them a call to find out all the benefits of being a Chamber of Commerce member and how to join at 719-852-2731. Or stop by the Chamber located at 947 First Avenue. Be sure to check back next month for another Monta Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast on slvoices.com or any major podcast platform.
The Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce is proud to sponsor the monthly Monta Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast, highlighting member businesses, events, and organizations. The Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce exists to promote business in the Monta Vista area. They serve its members and the community at large by planning and hosting many local events, social media promotions, advertising, and help to improve community relations and communication among the residents and guests of the Monta Vista area. Their mission is to advance a sustainable business environment and improve the quality of life for the community. The Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce is located at 947 First Avenue. You can call them at 719-852-2731. That's 719-852-2731. Or visit their website, MontaVistaChamber.org. That's MontaVistaChamber.org. And check back at the beginning of every month for another Monta Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast on slvoices.com.
We appreciate you telling your friends to listen to the podcast on slvoices.com and check out our extensive calendar of events. More listings in one location than any other website around. You can help spread the word too by joining our Facebook group, SL Voices, Your Voice in the San Luis Valley, and liking our posts on other social media outlets. Also, check out our Instagram page for behind-the-scenes looks at what we do. And please patronize our local sponsors. Remember to support the businesses here in the Valley. Most are owned and operated by your family, friends, and neighbors. We all love this area, want to see it flourish, and you can help by buying and supporting locally in your own and surrounding communities. Check back for another local podcast soon. Until then, this has been San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley.